If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I drive a tow truck on the night shift. Last week, I got a call that made me fear the woods. I've been driving a tow truck for Morrison's Auto Recovery for 8 years now, starting on day shifts, but the night work pays better and there's less traffic to deal with. You get used to the weird hours, the drunk drivers who wrapped their cars around telephone poles, the breakdowns on dark stretches of highway where cell service cuts out. It's honest work, and I'm good at it. Most calls are routine. Dead battery, flat tire, fender bender where nobody got hurt. Every once in a while, you get something that sticks with you. Like the time I pulled a sedan out of Miller's Creek with the driver still inside. Or the guy who insisted his car had been moved while he was getting coffee at the truck stop. You learn to take people's stories with a grain of salt. Stress and fear makes folks see things that aren't there. But last Tuesday's call was different. I'm still trying to make sense of what happened out there on Route 47. The dispatch came in at around 2:30 a.m.
Vehicle off the road, mile marker 22, possibly occupied.
Linda's voice crackled through the radio.
Caller said the driver might still be inside, but she couldn't get close enough to check.
Mile marker 22 on Route 47 runs through some of the thickest forest in the county. It's a winding two-lane that connects the valley towns to the interstate, popular with truckers trying to avoid the way stations. During the day, it's scenic enough, but at night, it's just 20 miles of dark trees and no cell coverage. I grabbed my coffee and headed out. Linda had given me the coordinates, so I knew roughly where to look, but finding a car that's actually off the road can mean anything from pulled out onto the shoulder to wrapped around a tree 50 yards into the woods. I kept my speed reasonable and watched for reflectors or broken glass. I found it about a quarter mile past the marker. At first glance, it looked like the driver had just pulled off to take a call or get some sleep. The car, a blue Honda Accord, maybe 5 years old, was parked about 30 feet into the tree line on a patch of relatively flat ground. The engine was off, but the headlights were still on, casting weak beams through the fog that had rolled in during the drive. I pulled my truck up parallel to the road and hit the flashers. Standard procedure is to assess the situation before you start hooking anything up, so I grabbed my flashlight and walked out over to see what I was dealing with. That's when I noticed the first odd thing. The car's doors were all locked, windows rolled up tight, and I could see someone in the driver's seat. A young woman, maybe mid-20s, gripping the steering wheel like her life depended on it. When my flashlight beam hit the windshield, she looked up at me with eyes that were wide with terror, makeup running. I tapped on the driver's side window. "Ma'am, I'm with Morrison's Towing. Are you hurt? She shook her head but didn't roll down the window. Instead, she pointed towards the woods behind her car and mouthed something I couldn't make out. Ma'am, I need you to open the window so we could talk. I called, raising my voice slightly. This time she did roll it down, but just a crack. You need to get this car out of here, she said, her voice barely above a whisper. Right now, don't unhook anything. Don't get out again. Just pull it out back on the road. What's wrong? Are you hurt? Do you need medical attention? I'm not hurt. She glanced towards the trees again. But there's something out there. Something big. It's been watching me for the past 2 hours. I'll admit, my first thought was drugs or alcohol. Would it be the first time someone got spooked by shadows while under the influence? But she didn't smell like booze, and her speech was clear and coherent. What kind of something? I asked, playing along. I don't know. I never got a good look at it, but it's huge, bigger than a person, and it's been circling the car, just staying back in the trees where I can't see it clearly. I played my flashlight beam into the woods behind her car. The fog made it hard to see more than 20 feet, but I didn't spot anything unusual. Just pine trees and underbrush, same as the rest of the forest along Route 47. Ma'am, I don't see anything back there. How about we get your car back on the road and I'll follow you to the nearest gas station? You could call someone from there. No! Her voice was firm. Don't go back there. Just hook up the car and pull me out, please. Something in her tone made me pause. I've dealt with a lot of scared drivers over the years, and you learn to distinguish between different kinds of fear. Drunk fear is sloppy and unfocused. Accident fear is sharp but fades once the immediate danger passes. This was something else. The kind of steady, controlled terror that comes from extended exposure to real danger. I decided to humor her. All right, ma'am. I'm going to hook up the car from here and pull you back on the road. Keep your doors locked and stay inside. Walking back to my truck, I found myself listening more carefully to the sounds around me. The forest was quiet, unusually quiet. No owl calls, no rustle of small animals moving through the underbrush. Just the low hum of my truck's engine and the distant sound of a semi passing on the interstate miles away. I was backing my truck into position when I noticed the smell. It was strong and musky. Like a wet dog that had been rolling in something dead. The kind of smell that makes you breathe through your mouth. I'd encountered plenty of roadkill during my years of towing, but this was different. More intense, and somehow, fresher. Getting out to attach the chains, I played my flashlight around the Honda and immediately understood why the woman was so terrified. On the roof of her car were two massive handprints pressed deep into the metal. Not scratches or dents from debris, but actual palm and finger impressions where something had gripped the roof hard enough to deform it. Each handprint was easily twice the size of mine, with long finger marks that ended in what looked like claw scratches. Fuck! I muttered, running my flashlight along the car's perimeter. There were more marks. Scratches along the passenger side, like something had tested the strength of the windows, and gouges in the paint where claws had scraped across the metal. Now you see why I won't get out! The woman called from inside the car, her voice muffled by the glass. I was crouched down examining the damage when the first branch broke. Not a small twig snapping under the weight of a squirrel, but a substantial branch, the kind that takes real force to break. The sound came from somewhere deeper in the woods, maybe 40 yards from where I was working. I stood up and played my flashlight in that direction, but the beam only penetrated about 20 feet into the fog before getting swallowed up. Then came another branch. Crack. This one closer. Maybe.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
30 yards away. Then another. Crack. From a different direction entirely.
Sir?
The woman's voice was tight with anxiety.
It's doing that thing again.
What thing?
The knocking. It's been doing it all night. Breaking branches, hitting trees, like it's trying to scare me.
As if responding to her words, a loud thump echoed through the forest, the unmistakable sound of something heavy striking a tree trunk. Then another, from different directions around us, creating a pattern of impacts that seemed to be moving in a circle around our position. I worked faster to attach the chains, trying to keep my movements efficient and quiet. The whole time, I was acutely aware of being watched. You know that feeling when someone's staring at you from across a room? It's like that, but amplified. Like something with very focused attention was studying every move I made and growing increasingly agitated by our presence. As I was tightening the last chain, my flashlight flickered and went out. I shook it, smacked it against my palm. Nothing. The batteries had been fresh when I started my shift, but now it was completely dead. I had a backup light in the truck, but that meant walking 20 feet in the dark. The branch knocking stopped. The forest went completely silent.
Sir, what happened to your light?
Battery died. I'm gonna go get another one from the truck.
Don't leave the car, please.
The fear in her voice was palpable, and standing there in the darkness, surrounded by that oppressive silence and the lingering smell of wet animal, I found I didn't want to leave her either.
I'll be right back, just getting another flashlight.
I walked to my truck as casually as I could manage. But every instinct I had was screaming at me to run. The fog seemed to have gotten thicker, and the Honda's headlights only created small pools of illumination that made the surrounding darkness feel deeper. I grabbed my backup flashlight from the cab and was turning to head back when a sound froze me in place. It started as a low rumble, almost subsonic, that I felt in my chest before I actually heard it. It then rose into something between a roar and a howl, a guttural, primal sound that seemed to come from something with a throat structure unlike any animal I knew. The call lasted maybe 5 seconds, echoing through the trees and seeming to come from all directions at once. When it ended, The silence that followed was somehow worse than the sound itself. That's when the creature stepped into the Honda's headlight beams.
Sir?
The woman's voice was urgent now.
We need to go, right now.
I didn't argue. I climbed into my truck, put it in gear, and started pulling the Honda back towards the road. The chains were taut, the car rolling smoothly behind me, when something massive crashed through the underbrush directly in front of us. It stepped into the full glare of my headlights, and for one terrifying moment, I saw it clearly. The creature was enormous, at least 9 feet tall, maybe more. Its body was covered in thick, shaggy, dark hair that seemed to absorb the light rather than reflect it. The shoulders were impossibly broad, the arms so long they nearly reached its knees. Its hands ended in fingers that looked more like thick clawed talons. But the worst part was its face. It resembled that of a human, but with proportions that shouldn't exist on neither man nor beast. The eyes were deep-set and intelligent, reflecting my headlights with a yellow-green shine. When it opened its mouth, I could see teeth that were designed for tearing. It stood in the road for maybe 3 seconds, studying us with that terrifying intelligence. Then it began walking towards my truck.
Go!
The woman screamed from behind me.
Go, go, go!
I gunned the engine, hoping to scare it off, but the creature didn't flinch. Instead, it picked up speed, moving faster than anything that size should be able to move. My truck lurched forward, the Honda's weight dragging behind me, but we were moving too slowly. The creature reached my driver's side door just as I managed to get us rolling. Through the window, I found myself looking up into its face from less than 3 feet away. It placed one massive hand against my door, and I heard the metal groan under the pressure. The handprint it left behind completely covered the window, fingers easily twice the length of a human's, with what looked like thick black claws at the tips. For a moment, we were locked in this impossible stare down. Me gripping the steering wheel so hard my knuckles had gone white, and this thing studying me with its eyes that held far too much awareness. I could hear its breathing, deep, measured breaths that fogged the glass between us. Then something seemed to shift in its expression, and it stepped back. I didn't wait to see what it would do next. I floored the accelerator, pulling the Honda behind me as fast as the tow chains would allow. In my side mirror, I watched the creature grow smaller, but it didn't disappear into the forest. It just stood there in the middle of the road, watching us go. We didn't stop until we reached the gas station, 8 miles down Route 47. My hands were shaking so badly, I could barely put the truck in park. Behind me, I could hear the woman crying. Not hysterical sobs, but the quiet crying of someone who had just survived something that shouldn't even be survivable. When I finally got out to unhook her car, I saw what the creature had left behind. There was a handprint pressed deep into the metal of my truck's door, not just on the surface, but actually deformed inwards like the metal was soft clay. Each finger had left a distinct impression, complete with claw marks that had scratched through the paint down to the bare metal. The woman stood next to me, staring at the evidence of what we had just encountered.
"Those weren't there before," she whispered.
"Nope," I agreed. "They weren't."
We stood there in the harsh, fluorescent light of the gas station, both looking at proof that what we had experienced was undeniably real. Physical evidence that something impossibly strong had touched our vehicles, had been close enough to kill us both if it had chosen to.
"What do you think it wanted?"
she asked. I thought about those intelligent eyes, the way it had studied us both so carefully. "I don't think it wanted to hurt us," I said finally. "I think it was curious." She nodded slowly, like it was trying to figure out what we were. I called in sick for the rest of my shift and drove straight home. Spent the next hour sitting in my kitchen, drinking coffee, and trying to make sense of what had just happened. The rational part of my mind kept searching for explanations. Maybe someone in an elaborate suit? Maybe a circus animal that had escaped? But the handprints on my truck door told a different story. No person, no matter how large, could have compressed steel like that. And no known animal moved the way that creature had moved. I still work the night shift. I still take calls along Route 47 when they come in. But now I carry extra flashlights. And I never work alone in areas where the trees grow thick and the fog rolls in heavy. I had the handprints on my truck filled and painted over, but sometimes, late at night, when I'm driving those dark stretches of highway, I run my fingers over the spot where they were and remember. Because whatever's out there in those woods, it's still out there. And now I know it's curious about us. That might be the most terrifying thing of all.